Hello, everyone. Hope you all had a great Christmas. So, first 3.5 minutes of the podcast was lost due to bad internet connections, but we'll hop right into Scott talking about his holiday gaming. Thanks, and welcome to Infendo Radio.
Infendo Radio is on now.
I haven't been playing the Wii U as much as I had hoped to get ready for the holidays and so on, but I picked it up here and there, played a little bit of Mario, but not too much overall. We've been using it a lot for Netflix. Just finished off the seventh season of Supernatural, so trying to basically just kind of wasting time with that, but not as much as I had hoped for with all the busyness that's been going on.
Right. So, I mean, what are you seeing yourself playing and watching Netflix and playing games more just like on the gamepad, or are you using it along with the television as well? I mean, is it kind of like a split? Just kind of depends on the situation.
It's almost split for me. With the games, when I'm playing them, especially when I'm playing Mario, I'm finding that I'm playing it more on the gamepad than anything else. Just because it's easier. It's right there in front of me. I don't have to, you know, take the TV away from the kids or my wife. I can just, you know, just play and do what I need to, what I want to do while they're watching or doing what they want to do. With the Netflix, that where I'm definitely watching more on the actual TV itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids are using the gamepad, so while we're watching, you know, whether it be the news or whatever TV show, you know, they're just taking the Netflix, sitting on the couch and watching the movie while they're watching that. The only downside so far with it is the fact that they haven't. They've basically been listening to through the sound on the gamepad. So kind of annoying listening to their movie playing while we're watching TV. So
right.
If I could just get them kind of to use headphones.
Headphones, yeah.
Until
right.
then, you know, it's pretty cool that everybody can kind of do their own thing at the same time, but still be in the same room.
Yeah.
That's a really cool feature of it.
Yeah,
I've been playing it. I mean, that's the one thing I've been getting more into as far as the game. I mean, it's like when I first got, you know, New Super Mario Brothers U. It's been, you know, the whole game, playing it exclusively in the gamepad aspect that I really like a lot about more for it. I mean, it's just it's really just flexes the feature of what to be. I mean, what this gamepad, where this feature can be going furthermore, and just, you know, like we said previously before, it destroys that wall between as far as like when you're gaming on a TV and somebody else wants to watch something else, but you know. You're able to cut that away. You're able to cut that away to, you know, compromise for somebody else to watch on the TV. And whereas, you know, playing on the gamepad, it's just a shame that this thing, the gamepad itself, has a horrid, but you know, it's really bad battery life. So, I just really hope we can be able to upgrade these batteries in the near future. I mean, it looks like it could be an easy fix, but I just don't want to tinker around with that thing, given how much these things could be separately. I mean, even to replace, possibly.
Right, yeah. And I mean, I don't think I've seen anything with replacement batteries yet, like at, you know, at Walmart or at GameStop or anything like that. But I imagine those will emerge, and maybe they'll come with extended battery life. But who knows? I mean, you're right. That's one thing that is kind of a downer about it, is that the battery is not quite. It 3 hours is kind of pushing it. If I mean, I found that after 2.5 hours, sometimes the battery's going out. So.
Exactly. I was actually hoping that there might be a third party out there during the holiday season that would do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You're kind of limiting yourself to where you can be in the room, depending on where the outlet is, because you want to be plugging it in most of the time. So that kind of defeats the purpose also of the cradle, because then it's kind of just sitting there, and you want the. You kind of want to move the plug around depending on where you are in the house, you know. So it's kind of a bummer, but hopefully third parties or Nintendo will kind of fix that with an updated battery or something like that in the future.
Definitely. Can't wait.
I hope so as well. I mean, and one, I'm actually trying to – I'm kind of looking into the market of maybe getting, a screen protector for this thing, because I've noticed, especially with the glossy finish on here, it's just smudging really badly, and I just don't want that screen to get scratched up like, you know, like my old DS or my old Game Boy or something like that. I mean, I I know you could probably find some protective skins like that, maybe, like, little things you can put over the screen for, like, $7 or $10 online, I mean, I posted this on Infendo, but did you all, like, what did you all think about the retro NES skins that they had put out for, like, the deluxe console?
Yeah, it was kind of neat, actually.
Definitely. I saw I was checking out the site, and out of all of them, I think the retro was my favorite out of all of them. You know, it's not something I've moved towards, but I'm thinking that might be something I might pick up one day. You know, it's just too cool not to get for it.
Oh, yeah. And that, well, I mean, I wonder how bad, I mean, easily it is to put those things on, because I feel like, you know, you see it, like, the set mark on there, like, on the website, like, oh, wow, that looks really, really awesome. I'd like to have that in there, but I feel like when I put it on there, like, when I would put this on my console, it would just be, like, bubbling up or something like that. I'm like, does this go here, here, here? You know how it's.
Right.
I feel like it would just do, it's the same way, whatever, when you're trying to put those, like, sticker, like, you know, little bumper sticker, well, little stickers on your windows of your car, and yet they just don't turn out as well as you originally thought.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, I've seen really cool mods in the past, too, before that from... I remember some in the beginning of the Wii's life cycle. They were, like, a clear mod, so then you can see the insides of it. I'm kind of curious to see when that kind of stuff will come out for the Wii U.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A clear one would be really awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like case mods. I mean, I've never done one myself, but, I mean, I figure that it would be pretty neat to have something like that.
That reminds me of a story of... you could probably... it was this, okay, this guy had his, you know, a white Xbox 360, I think it was like one of the original ones that he had, and he would take this around and get it signed by, you know, industry vets. Like, he would lug his console around to where you'd, like, black marker and ask them to, like, sign his console.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, his console bricks, has the red rings of death, and... as he's sending it in, he writes this long, long, like, he chronicles this whole thing on, like, one of his, like, his, this guy's on his website, and he just writes this lengthy letter and explanation as he's sending this off to Xbox, like, to, Xbox, support, basically detailing, like, please, please, if you can, replace the console, I mean, the innards itself, but please, can you keep the shell?
Right.
I would really, really like that, because this has been, I've taken this thing around, signed it by all these bigwigs in the industry. I mean, and if not, you know, just fix the console itself, but please, please don't take this off. So he sends it in, and he tapes the whole letter on top of the console, and I think he made second one on there to, you know, double check, to make sure that they would read it.
Right.
He gets it back, and the thing is swiped clean. All the signatures are gone. And he had checked on there to see, like, did they give him a new console by accident? Like, no. They had cleaned it off thinking it was, like, ouch, you know, just dirt and all that. I'm like, I just don't know how I would feel just to get that thing back right now, thinking, like, wow, all that hard work to actually getting that thing signed. Even though, I mean, I wouldn't go that route. I mean, it's just a... I felt bad for the guy. I really did. It was just that point where I'm thinking, like, wow, you've given the explicit instructions, and they go around and just, oh, make that wrong move to the point where, like, oh, this has to be clean. Swipe away.
Right.
God, it's... I don't know what I would do if my Wii console for some reason was signed by, I don't know, like, Reggie Fils-Aimé or Shigeru Miyamoto. And I had told the same thing. I think at that point, if I got that thing swiped clean, I'd make a phone call to them would not be sufficient enough. I think
that's
just a trip up to support in Redmond, and I would just demand, you know, you get who so and so in here and re-sign this thing, because I did.
That's right.
I think for me, the sentimental value on the unit itself would far outweigh the risk of sending it in. I think I would just spend the money and buy a new one and keep that one to the side, even though it doesn't work, just because of that sentimental value.
Right.
I think I would too. I mean, obviously it'd be the world's largest paperweight, but, you know,
true.
I mean, it'd just be something to put on your shelf, whatever, or just encase something, you know, encase it and just kind of have it as your own little plaque. I mean, it's, you don't want to, like, lose something like that. I mean, I remember I had, like, baseball cards as a kid, and I had them signed by, like, you know, my favorite players, and I mean, obviously, you know, the value may not be as grand now, but it's just, again, they do have that sentimental value to me, to the point like, you know, I worked hard to get this, you know, I waited in line, or I was going around like those barrage of kids, you know, to hoping to get an autograph from a player, and, you know, I got that. It's just, you know, obviously they're stored away somewhere, but I mean, it's the sentimental value to me. It's the fact that, like, I made that effort and I was able to get it.
Right. Yeah, I don't have anything so collectible that's been signed, but I have a lot of games that I have in my case that are kind of hard to find. Like, I have, like, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 for the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox, or the original Xbox. I have those ones.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Dreamcast version. So, because that's just one of my favorite games. I love that fighting game. It's just fantastic. But, yeah, that's about it.
I think the PlayStation 2 version of that is, like, super rare. Like,
yeah, it is. I worked at GameStop for a long time, and then so I would see a lot of games come in and out, and that one just happened to come in. So put it aside and used my employee discount, and it was mine.
I would say, speaking of super rare games, well, possibly soon to be one, have you ever, any of you guys considered possibly, you know, picking up Too Human, given the situation that's happened with Silicon Knights and, the Unreal Engine, like, yo, lawsuits?
Yeah, picking up a brand new one and keeping it sealed, right?
I mean, I figured just a game that's like, I mean, you have games out there that are discontinued or whatever, but you never hear about games being ordered to be destroyed.
Right.
And when I had that, right. I was like trying to, I mean, I remember my local Walmart, they had those things, had Too Human priced down to like about maybe $10.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those games where it's got like, it suffered through development hell, and I believe it went through three console generations before it finally, you know, three different companies, to the point where it finally, you know, it was able to be released in, it was like 2007. And I was kind of excited for it, whatever. I mean, but back when it was a GameCube exclusive. But
yeah.
In this case right now, it's one of those games, whatever, that time is not very friendly to it. I mean, you can ask Duke Nukem Forever, for instance, whatever. I mean, for a time where it's given such a long, troubled development cycle, it doesn't really mean it's going to be perfect. I mean, obviously, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto is quoted saying, you know, a bad game is bad forever, a delayed game is eventually, you know, eventually good, and yet people have to forget in that quote, it's eventually, you know. But, I don't know, I want to pick it up, but I checked on, like, Amazon, and copies right now are, like, upwards of 30 and back to $50 right now, so...
Wow.
I may just pick it up just for the S&Gs, you know, just to point like, hey, I have it, and if it is worth something, you know, there you go, good for me, whatever, something to sell or keep along, whatever. But yeah, I mean, it just still puzzles me, the fact that they have to order, like, courts order them to, like, destroy those copies of those games.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I have a copy that I've played of it, but I mean, I didn't play too much of it, and it's not sealed, so that's all I got.
I got the PS3 and the 360 version of the X-Men Destiny, which was part of that that lawsuit where they had the recall. It's weird though; it didn't affect the Wii and the DS versions of the game, of course, just the PS3 and 360. So I'm not sure how that's going to affect any value in the future or whatnot. But you know, it'll be cool to have a game in the future that you know, nobody else really has for those systems.
Right. So did you guys do any gaming shopping for any of your relatives for the holiday season? Did you guys purchase any, maybe Scotch, anything gaming wise for your kids or anything like that?
You know, it's weird. This year, I didn't actually get any games for the kids or anything. That was something that you know, I guess, you know, it's kind of an odd thing. Usually, I do at least a couple games each year. I guess though, I got a few things for myself. There's the Epic Mickey Wii controller charger. It's got the big ink blot and Mickey fighting it. It was a KB Toys or / Toys R Us exclusive. So I got that. That was pretty
cool.
Cool.
Wait,
yeah,
KB,
it's pretty awesome.
KB Toys still exists?
Well, you know, it's weird that they don't, I don't think, but I think they were absorbed maybe into Toys R Us, and Toys R Us just kept their name or whatnot. But when I ordered it, the receipt actually said KB, and it was, you know, a recent date, so it's kind of cool. And the eyes glow blue on the ink blot, so that's kind of cool. And then the you know, as far as I guess other things for me, I did get a Neo Geo CD and AES console, so I've got both of those two, nice. Obviously used, but haven't hooked those up yet. I actually don't have any games for them yet, so I haven't been itching to get them hooked up. And then finally, I got the new Wii Mini. I had that imported in from Canada, so it's pretty cool. I mean, I kind of actually like the system. I haven't hooked it up or played it yet. I mean, there's really no reason to with me having my my original Wii, but it's just kind of a cool system. It's pretty solid. It's very basic. It reminds me of maybe some older, kind of generic systems that might be out there, where you just press the button to the right and the lid just pops up, almost like an old CD player. But the red and black color is actually pretty sharp on it. Comes with a red Wii remote and controller. And but overall, I mean, I'm pretty impressed with the way that it's built. I mean, it does look like it's going to be a pretty solid unit. So if you're using it just to, take over to a friend's house and play some games without taking your expensive Wii unit over there, it seems like it's going to last.
Nice. Yeah, I've only bought a couple of gaming things, and I wanted to buy a Wii, one of the Wii Minis, because it's pretty slick looking, actually, but kind of refrained. I already got my Wii that's working, and no point. Just would have been, I couldn't bring myself to purchase one, but
it'd be more served as like a collector's item. I mean,
yeah,
given how it's just like a standalone Wii. There's no internet function to it or anything like that. Unless you really, really feel like the need to, to play it or just to have it, go ahead. But it's just, I mean, it's only a Canadian exclusive, right? Yeah, I think that's all it is. So
for now,
For now, that's right. And really, that's why I got it for the collector's version. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think with that and the Neo Geos, I'm up to right at 45 consoles and handhelds. So nice. I mean, it's right now I'm kind of at the point where there's a lot of the obscure type consoles that are still out there, or if I wanted to go for every generation of the Game Boy, I mean, every generation in color, that might be the next step. But I think for now I've got all the base units, the main units that really mattered in the history of the video game. So but then that's really why I got it. I mean, it's just something that not a lot of people are going to have at this time. So it's just a cool addition to the collection.
Right.
It is. It's one of those good things you can have. I mean, I still have my old Nintendo consoles, but I mean, I can never really part with it or whatever. I mean, given even though I've transferred all my stuff from my Wii to my Wii U, I mean, I just can't give myself to give it up. Really, I mean, it's gonna go into my little my little collector's box of games back in the garage and just sit there. I mean, but I hopefully, when the day I get a place of my own, maybe I can hook them all up at one point for a little station just to have it there. But, I mean, there's just something about those Nintendo products where you just can't really part away with. I mean, I mean, when I have, like, with a 360, for instance, I mean, once their new consoles come out, yeah, I could easily part away with that. But there's just something really special about these Nintendo consoles. You can't just, I can't let it go.
Yeah, I still have my old Game Boy that I got from, an import shop. It was a clear one, a clear Game Boy Color. Oh. I got that with a Link's Awakening, and it was, so eye-opening. It was my first handheld ever, and, it was just, just an amazing console.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as a console, I mean, well... I just live to actually have another time. Whenever when you have those those handhelds, and just go back to another time where just that there's not that joy that you get with having a handheld right now. I mean, obviously I'm waiting in line to waiting to be getting a 3DS soon. Mm-hmm. My interest in handheld gaming has just been, year after year, just been kind of going down each year. I mean, maybe the fact that, I don't have enough time to play it, or maybe it's, you could relate it to, how mobile gaming has been, overtaking, the world by storm, or just the fact that, you just don't have a legitimate reason to actually, buy one. But, I mean, other than that, it just, when you had, a Game Boy, anything like that, I mean, given how, it had a monopoly over the handheld market for such a long time, you you did treat it like your second console almost. I mean, like, before even I got a PlayStation 2 as my second, like, you know, first non-Nintendo console I ever bought my entire life, I did treat my Game Boy, like, as if it was another console.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, something else I could actually go back and forth for.
Yeah, definitely, because there was a lot of good games on the Game Boy, like, RPG-wise, that were, like, that were just meaty games, unlike the right now with, like, the iOS games and Android games. I mean, I think they're fun for, like, short bursts, most of them. I mean, there are some games that are a little bit more developed, but right now, I don't know, it's weird, kind of weird, because the Wii U is taking the place of what my, like, 3DS had been. It would be like, you know, lay in bed and play a game before you go to sleep. That's kind of what I see myself doing with the Wii U. It's kind of interesting how that's changed things.
Yeah, definitely. If only my walls are about thinner so I can actually do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't go too much further in mine either. But, you know, I think I was kind of opposite with the handhelds back in the Game Boy days. I mean, with me, the Nintendo, the Super NES and Genesis, and even into the N64 and GameCube, I played the consoles a lot more than I did the handhelds, and I think for me it was the battery life on them. Mm-hmm. I never had the ones that did take, you know, AC adapters. I never really had the AC adapter, so I relied a lot on the AA batteries or whatnot, and you know that just killed it for me.
Right.
Constantly buying batteries, but since I got the DS, you know, I've almost switched. You know, I'm more with the handheld than I am, you know, with the actual consoles themselves. And of course, having like the handheld retro gamer where I can put in my Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, and Master System, you know, it's like almost opened up that world back to me of the handheld gaming, and that's what I do mostly, especially on the go. I mean, the battery life on these things are just amazing compared to what they used to be. And for example, the handheld retro, you know, it's got an 8-hour battery life on it to play the old classics. So I find myself playing a lot more of the handheld now, but I still, of course, like the consoles. I just wish they would find a way to make a handheld PS1 or PS2 now. I mean, I know there are some mods out there, but I'm not brave enough to try modding a system yet for that.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't know. I like to see like console mods like that too. One of the coolest ones that I've seen is the guy that turned his Nintendo 64 into a portable one. Now that would be something I'd be all about.
That would be pretty awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because I remember, what was it, Sega did something like that right at the end of like Genesis, like a life cycle. What was it, was it the Nomad, I believe it was?
The Sega Nomad, and then there was the Game Gear.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Game Gear, I mean, yeah.
But the Nomad, didn't the Nomad, like, literally just play Master System games? Isn't that how it worked?
No, the Nomad played was a portable, like, Genesis, and I believe it came out, like the mid-90s. And one thing I remember, like, I mean, I didn't know about its existence really until about a few years later.
Right.
And obviously I think it did well in Japan. I mean, not to like a rousing success, but I mean, there was a good little market for it. But I mean, I just remember it, like when reading about it, that had it probably a far worse battery life than the Game Gear. And that thing, like, I don't even know how many batteries that thing used, but God forbid how many I could probably think of, because Game Gear, for anybody who owned one, I mean, that took like around good 8 AA batteries.
Yeah, I actually just pulled it up here real quick, and it doesn't say how many batteries, but it looks like rechargeable batteries were not recommended due to voltage issues. And there was a rechargeable battery pack that was available for $79, which, you know, back then was, it looks like it was around 1995. That, was pretty pricey. That was actually almost under half the cost of the system itself. So that was pretty pricey there. The Game Gear did have a Master System add-on that you could just kind of plug into it where the cartridge would go, and it would screw into the back of the system and allow you to play Master System games. But again, you know, playing it with batteries was not the best thing. So you'd have to go out and buy an adapter to make that work.
how we just I don't know how we got through probably that time, like playing like handhelds like that, just going through batteries upon batteries upon batteries.
Oh my gosh. It's terrible. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there was always, you can always buy rechargeable batteries, but those ones never lasted as long. Actually, now the ones that you can buy aren't too bad, but
kids today do not know the troubles that we went through as far as when you're trying to play a game, your Game Boy, whatever, and it's like, oh, batteries are out. Oh, let me try my remote. Okay, those didn't last long, and you're just searching feverishly around for batteries. And at the time, you know, as a kid, I didn't drive. So, I mean, I trying to get my parents to go up and buy batteries was always a hassle.
Right. Yeah, I mean, with the Game Gear, especially, I remember that thing took like, gosh, I want to say 6 batteries, and it only got like 4 hours of battery life. So it was it was terrible. That's like $5 for every time you want to play that thing.
Because
you have to buy a whole pack of batteries. It was crazy.
Yeah, there is no way that you know, back then my parents were gonna invest that much on batteries for me, and I think even myself, you know, once I started working on my own and whatnot, I would have never spent the money on the batteries.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess it's good now that, I mean, still the Wiimotes go use batteries, but I mean, I use rechargeable ones for that, and it's good that Nintendo's kind of moved away, and with the gamepad is completely, you can just plug it in and charge it. Same with the Gamepad Pro or whatever it's called, the classic control. I don't know what the term is for it, but that one's pretty nice. I mean, I've had it, and I right out of the box, I've been playing with it ever since, and I haven't charged it once yet. So, it's got a pretty remarkable battery life so far.
Oh wow!
Yeah. It's pretty neat. So, what games have you guys been playing the most on your console now? Still kind of Mario? I mean, have you guys kind of dabbled into anything else?
I've been mostly focusing on Mario for the most part. And I have to say, in the game, I'm trying to take my time and you know, really get the full experience out of it. Although at first I was kind of rushing through, but I'm trying to backtrack a little bit. But the ghost levels, I don't know about you guys, but those levels are probably my least favorite in the whole game so far.
Yeah, they're
far.
Tedious.
I mean, I love, you know, I'll go through and then, you know, I go through the door and then suddenly I'm back where I started, or I forget which level it was, but there's like a hidden door that's blocked by some coin blocks in the bottom right hand corner, and it took me forever to figure that out. So it was kind of a tedious part there, but once I got through there, it wasn't too bad. But yeah, they're probably right now going to be the one levels that make me swear the most while playing.
Yeah, that's right. And it's even worse when you have to try and if you're trying to find all the coins for the level to. Well, have you guys beaten the game yet? I mean, do you guys know what the ending is, or like, I mean, what you unlock at the end?
No, I've not. I have not yet. I've heard what it is, but you can relate. I mean. Go ahead, please.
Just like, you know, just like Super Mario World, you just kind of unlock a star level type of deal, and then you...
Oh, okay. I was thinking, like, is there... Okay, wait, there's a legit ending or something like that? There's something that's really different? They're not pulling with this?
No.
It was a dream the whole time, like in Mario 2. I mean, wow, I mean...
No, that'd be great. Bowser is like it's like a sitcom, and Bowser's I don't know, it's got to be something.
It's a sitcom and Bowser's sick mind. I mean, wow. I mean, when you always got to look. Okay, what was it? It was a video I was watching. They were talking about like really dumb, like, you know, dumb side characters in games. And yes, Peach was on the top of the list, whatever. But of course, people were like, the main argument they put on there was like, well, she did all this stuff in Mario 2, whatever. Like, yeah, she did. But here's the thing. That game was a dream. It didn't happen.
Yeah, right. And not to mention that it was not even a Mario game to begin with. But
I know. that's two strikes against it. So
yeah. No. Yeah, I think that that with the Mario game, anyways, especially, it really kind of showcases what the system's all about, because it implements the Miiverse so well. I mean, it's just so awesome seeing like your friends pop up on levels, giving advice or talking about like what happened or drawing a funny picture about something. I mean, you know, it's pretty neat. I mean, it's kind of cool what Nintendo's got going on with the Miiverse.
Yeah, I do like that part. You know, I know that, you know, going back to the ghost levels, I'll look back, and when I do post how, you know, it's, you know, frustrating or whatnot that other people are going through the same thing on those levels, or there's other levels that are just a piece of cake and no problems at all. And it's kind of cool seeing other people's feedback along with mine to know that I'm not the only one having issues on a certain level, or I'm not the only one that did so well on a certain level or whatnot.
Right, yeah, and you can even go into the Miiverse without even skipping a beat during the game, and then looking at a particular level that you're playing right there, like seeing what people are posting about it, and yeah. You know, even getting advice like about how to get a certain coin or something like that. It's kind of neat.
Exactly. You know, the one thing I'm especially, you know, the levels that you know, have to start over a few times because haven't done so well. The whole Luigi tutorial walkthrough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the first time I got that, I thought it was kind of cool watching through it. But every time after that, you know, you're sitting there and there's kind of that doorbell sound at the beginning of the level. Oh, that's probably got to be one of the most annoying parts.
I completely agree. It's like, I get it. I haven't beaten this level yet, but leave me alone. I'm gonna do it this time.
I know that that feature got a lot of flack a couple years ago, how, like, Nintendo's just bringing out something to hold hands to make things easier. I'm like, here's the thing. You can ignore it,
yeah. But
like you said, that thing is hard to ignore whatever sometimes. But like you said, it gets really annoying, and I don't even realize it pops up. Like, I figure I'm like, it has to be like the 10th or 15th time or something like that where it finally pops up, or that, you know, the super guide pops up, little block pops up. And when I get into it, and it just comes by surprise, and I'm like, okay, you know, ignore it, whatever. And, you know, after, like, I'm failing, you know, making, like, really dumb jumps or something,
yeah.
Like, fail, and it just stares at me. It's like, you want to use me? I'm like, not now. I am not in the mood for your games.
Well, and that's just it, you know, watching him go through and just speed through the course without any issues at all. I think that just makes it more frustrating knowing that he can jump over that spot, you know, so easily. I get there and I fall into the lava, or I fall into, you know, spikes or whatever every single time. I mean, it probably makes me more upset watching him do it than me taking the time and actually doing it myself.
Right. Yeah, I used the super guide a couple of times. One of them was
Eugene, why would you?
Well, not to like pass a level I couldn't beat, but I mean, like, there was I wanted to see how it worked. And then the second time I did it, it was because I legitimately didn't feel like playing that level. I just wanted to continue on, and I eventually went back to the level and beat it. But I mean, yeah, you know, sometimes you just die in a certain spot like 100,000 times. You're like, okay, I just want to play a new level. Thanks. And
yeah.
It's just a good way to do that. I mean, and you know, I mean, you don't have to use it if you don't want to, and that's fine. But
I admit I used it once, I think, in previous games, like once, because I could not. There was one of the Ghost Mansion levels, and I remember I was like, "Where do I go?" I mean, I remember, like, I would just search, whatever. I'm like, and if it turns out it was a hidden wall, and I used it once, whatever, and it was one of those moments, like, seriously.
Yeah,
I skipped that so many times, and you know, I felt ashamed of myself. I did. I felt ashamed of myself, and as soon as that little marker came up there saying like, "Oh, you beat this," but you know, you beat it with a super guide. I'm like, I'm gonna make sure. You know, I went back and made sure that thing just never popped up again.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and how many times have you played the ghost levels, and you know, you finally get to the part you need to get to. You finally get past that part that you've been stuck on, and then suddenly you hear the 1 minute remaining music left, and you just barely make it to the finish, and then time runs out.
Right. Right, yeah, that's also, I mean, I think that the game implemented music so well into the overall experience. I mean, like, when you hear the wants or whatever, like, you know how then the music goes womp womp and the guys like dance, and then the flowers like start kind of like twist when that part,
oh yeah,
music comes on. It's pretty neat how Nintendo did that, how they implemented the soundtrack into the actual gameplay. It was kind of cool.
Definitely. That is one of my favorite parts.
Hmm. I think they've been doing that since even the DS games, but I mean, with this one, especially with the HD graphics, you can really, I mean, really enjoy it for what it is. Enjoy the game for how beautiful it is. I mean, I know a lot of people before the game came out were kind of panning it, showing this screenshot is New Super Mario Brothers Wii, and then this one is Wii U. Can you tell the difference? But you really can. It's on a lot of different levels in the game. I mean, it's amazing what Nintendo has done with side scrolling and with it HD graphics.
there were certain levels. I think it was like the soda jungle where the background looked like it was something out of Van Gogh.
And after
I played that, I mean, obviously, I like the difficulty of different levels, but when I had saw that and after playing all the way through, I'm like, why couldn't anything else be like this? Because I went back and replayed that over again just because I just loved staring in the background.
Yeah, that's a great level.
Great indeed. It just, once I saw that, I was just amazed by it. It was amazed by the colors and the colors implemented, and just, it not necessarily took my mind off the game, but it made me kind of show the flesh out. I'm like, you know, these Mario levels aren't all cookie cutter, like, you know, ideas, but something a little different. It just, because you obviously have your fire, your ice, your jungle, your sand level, and then when I'd see something like that, I'm like, more of this, please.
Right, and you know, outside of the first world, I think that Nintendo and the level designers really came out with some really unique ideas. I mean, of course, the first world is kind of basically your tutorial world, teaching you, like, hey, here's Yoshi, here's what a mushroom does, and so on and so forth. You know, like kind of like what Nintendo does with most of their games nowadays. But then once you get past that, even from the second world on, I mean, all the levels are so unique, and you don't see the same idea used more than once a lot of the times. And it's really, really interesting, actually. I really, really enjoyed that game a lot. I mean, I haven't played it since I beat it, and I just haven't really had the desire to go back and collect all the star coins yet, so maybe I'll do that in the future.
Yeah, I think I'd do the same. I just haven't had the urge as well. Now that you mentioned Yoshi, though, okay, tell me if you agree with this right now. I feel like the baby Yoshis are lemmings. Hear me on this, okay. You know when you collect these baby Yoshis, be it in-game or on the world map.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, when you enter the level, and they don't stop. They don't stop for you to pick you up. They walk away as the level starts. And I remember there'd be one where there'd be a cliff off there. And I remember when the level started, I was just grabbing something. I was grabbing something in the kitchen. And I see it walk off whenever as I come back in, I'm like, no.
I've lost quite a few of them also.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, though, because, like, especially the one that's, that, like, balloons up, you can basically use that to, like, cheat through levels, a lot of the levels anyways. And then if you beat the level with Yoshi, you get it in the start of the next level you go to. So that's kind of a cool – I think that's kind of Nintendo's little way of giving you an easier way to beat a level if you're having trouble doing it. You just go walk in the world map, find a baby Yoshi, and then have an easier way of beating the level. You know what I mean?
It is. You know, and you have that as well as, like, you know, with the other power-ups. But obviously with this, I mean, you know, we've gone through New Super Mario Bros. U, and I think it'd just be with time to, you know, I wouldn't say put the series aside. I mean, it's obviously a huge cash cow from Nintendo, but you just don't really see as much good, like that much of a difference between all these different variations. Not, I mean, yes, it's like samey kind of Mario style, but I mean, you really want to see something different as far as that. I mean, but obviously with this, it was kind of returned to the whole Super Mario World map. You've gotten a little bit up a little bit of a difficulty, but you just never really see anything different. I'm not asking for, like, different story. I'm just asking for a little bit more. Show me something that it's progressed a little bit more to the point where you would see with a new 3D Mario title. Not to say in that grand scope, but to the point like, oh, I can tell the difference between these.
Right, and you know, I think that's coming. I'm sure that Nintendo's working on Galaxy 3 or whatever it's going to be called. I imagine it's not going to be a Galaxy game again, but I'm sure that the next Mario, this Mario proper 3D, anyways, will be pretty. I mean, hopefully, it'll be amazing. I mean, Nintendo usually does good things with the franchise, so I'm excited to see what they can do with Mario in HD. It's going to be interesting.
You know, I would almost like to see a new Super Mario RPG type concept. You know, with various, you know, just reinstate the RPG elements back into the game. I think Super Mario RPG was a good start, but I think it can, you know, especially now with all the new technology and so on, it could be really, really improved from where it was and still give us, you know, the same Mario that we all like now. So that's something I would love to see in the future.
Yeah. Now is Square going to sign on for this? Because if so, then maybe I'll be interested in it. But I
yeah,
Square's had kind of a rough kind of I don't know, a couple of years with Final Fantasy 13 and 13-2. But I don't know, those ones kind of got mixed reviews. I actually enjoyed both of them, but. You know,
I know it's kind of off a Nintendo topic, but they just released the mini trailer for the Lightning Returns, and it looks really, really awesome. It actually almost reminds you of Assassin's Creed in a way, the way that you navigate and you know, move around and so on. But it looks like it's going to be fantastic. So hopefully they get that out of the way. They finally bring us Versus 13 and kind of move on and get to where they need to be.
Right. Yeah. I know that Square's had just showed the Lightning Returns thing, kind of rounding out the trilogy of the Final Fantasy 13, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Nintendo. I mean, maybe we'll even see a version of that on the Wii U. That could be kind of interesting as well.
That would be awesome. You know, I kind of hope that in the near future that you know, Final Fantasy kind of gets back to its roots on the Nintendo, and you know, maybe the next big game, you know, bring it back. But I know they've been working so much with the other two consoles. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But the Wii U has the capabilities now to match that. So hopefully,
right? Yeah. So what exactly have you been most excited about with the Wii U? I mean, is it the fact that you can kind of do just about anything with it, like with Netflix and with gaming? And I mean, I know for me, my favorite aspect about it is the fact that I don't have to always be on the TV. I mean, I'm just loving playing Mario and Call of Duty and even like FIFA on the gamepad while something else is going on, maybe a football game or a basketball game is on the main TV. It's really, that's the greatest thing to me about what Nintendo has done with the Wii U.
That's probably my biggest focus on it right now and what I love the most. I mean, I find that I'm doing more with the Wii U than I am, you know, with anything else. I mean, I'm using the Wii U gamepad for my TV remote now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, you know, playing the games right there on the gamepad, not interrupting the TV. Or even, you know, if I'm, you know, it's the weekend and I wake up early and I'm the only one up in the house, just playing right there on the gamepad, not even turning the TV on, which is really great. You know, the other great thing is, you know, updates. I mean, obviously everybody's had the update waits when it comes to the Wii U. But the fact that you can just do it right there on the gamepad and not have to stare at the TV screen for, you know, whatever it happens to be, depending upon the update, and you know, just make everybody in the house watch that update. You can just do it right there on the gamepad,
mm-hmm.
watch an episode of whatever your favorite show is on TV, and you know, and then go back to it. So that's what's really, really great about it. And of course, now with the Wii TV, you know, I've got to play around with it a little bit more, and I think that with sports and so on, it's going to be pretty huge. You know, it looks like it's going to really, really, you know, add to the experience. I mean, hopefully with the BCS game, with one watching that with Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
hopefully there'll be some sort of you know, integration with that also. So that's definitely something I can't wait for.
Yeah, no, I Nintendo TV, I mean, there's still some functionality on there that is missing. Like, I know when you go into the TV controls on Nintendo TV, you know, it's like a radial type of deal. And there's a place on there for like DVR functionality, and it says that it's coming
yeah.
soon. So I hope that once that stuff starts popping back up, that the in updates, so that then, you know, we'll kind of really see what Nintendo TV is all about. But no, I agree. It's really cool to watch like sporting things or even television shows I've watched where you can like comment in real time. And it's just neat to have that kind of interactivity with people on a different level.
Yeah, definitely. And the comments are actually something that, you know, I had forgot that were going to be a functionality. And actually when I did test it out, just seeing a few comments here and there, that was actually kind of a surprise at first, but then it, of course, rang the bell that was supposed to be part of it. And that I really like, because you can almost have, you know, depending upon the comments, you could, you know, really get to see what other people are doing and what they think of the show and input and so on.
Right. Right, yeah, I don't know. Nintendo is gonna have, I think if they do it right, they can have something really interesting on their hands with the gamepad and the eShop functionality stuff on it. I mean, if they allow people to get in there and kind of make these interesting little applications that you really, you know, can't really be done on any other console, then I think they're gonna have something really good going on with the Wii U. You know, I think mm-hmm. they've already sold me. I mean, I've already bought in.
Yeah. Well, I think we might see that, especially starting out with the reality TV in sports. I think we're going to see a lot of that at the beginning. You know, once the word is out that, you know, how many people, and once they have actual data to back it up, of course, you know, I think we'll see it a lot of that on reality shows where maybe you can start, you know, on your, you want to vote somebody off the show or whatnot. Maybe you can do it right there from the gamepad, see the behind the scenes stuff and so on. So that I can't wait to see when it gets to that far into the into its lifespan.
Right.
I agree. No, I agree. And it's well, one thing I liked about, like when I mentioned about for sports whatever is well, I mean giving more whatever into whatever is like, you know, just having that function whatever to, you know, interact with everything. And but one thing I was really disappointed in, it's kind of limiting right now because I think the only sports or leagues on there is NFL, NBA, college basketball, college football, but there's no baseball or hockey yet for some reason. And I found that really, really kind of like upsetting to me, whatever, when I saw like no hockey on there. I mean, I just want, like, I know obviously I can't watch it right now without the lockout going on, but right. Obviously without nothing to put my team on there, it upset me a little bit. It really did. And yeah, it's just really, I mean, but that could be updated soon, whatever, into it. But well, this kind of asks the question though. What's more room? What are the more room probably for other apps to come to this console? I mean, you have Hulu Plus, you have Netflix, you have Amazon Video, you have Nintendo TV. What's next? I mean, obviously we could there be room enough to put HBO Go on there possibly in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, things like that, like adding more video services. I mean, that just makes sense, you know, adding all of the ones that I mean, Amazon's already on there, so that's a big one, and then HBO should be on there hopefully. Hopefully Nintendo's going to help talks with those people about that. But I mean, what I'm most excited about is like the original stuff. Like, I mean, imagine if like they put magazine content on there or like from, I don't know, like People Magazine or like newspapers, like you can get like read the New York Times right off of it, or like, you know, just things like that. I mean, that it's going to be interesting where the console goes from there.
Yeah. I would say, you know, just along with like, you know, the Apple products, the Windows products, the Android products. I mean, the possibilities are almost limitless when they bring these applications on board. I mean, they can almost do anything with it. And, you know, a lot of the apps take up very little space, you know, especially if you have maybe an external memory or whatnot. Or even some of them could even just link directly to a, you know, a specific website to view, like you just said, magazine articles, mm-hmm. or newspaper articles and stuff. So I think there's a lot that can be done. And I think it's just, you know, time will tell when it comes down to it.
Yeah, and then not to mention, like, the games side of things. I mean, from what we've seen so far, the Wii U eShop is going to be doing good things for the indie developers, like people that just want to create a small game with a little bit of time with a little small amount of people and hopefully find success doing that.
It is, and, you know, I like the idea you mentioned of magazine subscriptions coming to that, because another thing that would be ideal for the iPad. I mean, not only that, I mean, you open up the digital portions of this magazine on there to interact with. Obviously, you know, the thing's not multi-touch, but things are able to work around with it. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got that, and plus, that alone would be able to work on there. But, of course, one thing we do need to fix on this is the slow loading menus, and did hear the news had broken out that from like a rough translation about what was it? It was the Satoru Iwata. They were asking about like I think Dragon Quest, and I guess the translation to who the interview mentioned how they were going to fix the slow slow OS loading, and then another report came in saying that was a translation error. So my hopes were like way to get my hopes up.
But right.
Again, this is something I really want them to fix soon, because I have internet that's very slow at my own parents' house, and yet what was originally supposed to be 10 seconds in between the menus has turns into around 30 seconds, 35, even 40. Right. It's dreadful. It really is. I mean, there's those times where I'm just lugging my Wii U probably up to my brother's house, who has a much faster internet connection and better bandwidth, but yet that's the reason why I haven't been playing Xbox Live for the longest time. It's just I don't have the sufficient needs to actually good enough internet. And, you know, somebody in the viewers is going to ask, like, well, why don't you just get better internet? Well, the thing is, I live out in the boonies. That's the reason why. I can't get a very good enough service. I mean, that's the reason why I'm doing this podcast up here on the weekends as opposed to there. Because if you want to do – I don't want to put Eugene through the whole horror of having to – edit a podcast where I'm on delay for 5 seconds because HughesNet just likes to mess with me.
Right. Oh yeah. I have family members that have the HughesNet too, and it's I mean you get internet, but it
works. It does. It's just when you're trying to either download probably stream video that's not necessarily on YouTube or to use services like Skype or anything else like that, or try to download anything. It's pretty shoddy. It is. It's dreadful to the point where I have to, like, you know, take a nap just to make sure that, like, to wait till it actually loads.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting then. I mean, because the Wii U is actually a pretty connected console. I mean, for all intents and purposes. I mean, does it take a long time for, like, for example, the Miiverse content to load on the when you're playing like Mario, or when you load up the console itself, and then it gets populated with all the Miis? Does like that take longer than normal, or are you seeing anything like that? No.
No. It doesn't. I mean, it goes fairly the same speed is lat like when I use for another connection. It's just going in between menus is what's killer. I mean, that's where the point where I get very, very frustrated with, you know, I'm, you know, twiddling my thumbs just waiting for this to get on. I mean, there are times where I rarely even post on Miiverse when I'm at that connection, but don't get me started on the last, you know, system update. I mean, that I was really, really well. Thing with the HughesNet though, there is a download cap. I mean, so I'm given about 750 megabytes, and I didn't check how much I had for the day. And the thing is, like, going between website, it doesn't take that much. It's when you're streaming video or doing something like on Skype or anything else, like open up apps that are reliable through the internet.
Right.
It takes a lot on there. Now, in the case of this, I didn't realize how much I was using on there, and when it's refilled every 24 hours. But it's not for me. It's not refilled every all the way full to like 750 megabytes. It's really refilled around 375.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how much was left, and the cap went out in the middle of my download.
I
figured that. I'm just like, oh god. And then I figured that you can get restore tokens, which essentially act as, hey, you don't have to wait 24 hours. Here are these tokens where you can get as much as you did, much like a download cap as you want. So I did that, and thankfully, it continued on. So
right, because then you would have been stuck with a console that may or may not have been bricked if you, like, unplugged it or if you turned it off. I mean, that's just a terrible situation to be in.
Oh, yeah.
Especially this close to Christmas right now. I don't need a console that's going to be broken. I mean, I had a similar situation with my 360 the first time I got it, about 3 or 4 months after I got it in 2007, and 2 days before, or a couple days before Christmas, it bricked. And, you know, I'm so upset, and I remember I was asked for that time thing was like BioShock and the first Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, at that time, you would probably wait upwards maybe a month or even more just to get your console back, because anybody who's experienced in Microsoft's, like, you know, customer service is. For lack of a better, like, you know, phrase, it is like talking to a brick wall.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had actually, it's terrible. I've had six consoles red ring on me of the six Microsoft consoles of the Xbox 360. I've had terrible luck with it. So don't get me started on their customer service. It's ridiculous.
And, you know, and to this day, as much as whatever, like, you have problems with Nintendo consoles, I mean, I'm not saying this as far as a bias to the site we work with, to this day, they still have the best customer service.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, I've only had one Wii break on me, and it was, I don't even know what happened. Like, I think my DVD drive gave out. It wasn't reading discs, so I got it, and then I sent it in. I expected, like, 2-3 weeks, and it was less than a week, and I got it back, and it was, you know, I mean, it's just fantastic. It's, I don't know, Nintendo does a good job on that side of things, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, it's nice to actually get that service, like, that, friendly customer service, like you're just chatting with somebody and nobody else who's just like, okay, I have other people to work with right now. Mm-hmm. You're going to take their time. Well, obviously it's their job, but, you know, obviously there's nobody else waiting in line for you to actually help you working out with that. I mean, Nintendo's customer service is for almost like 20, 25 years has still been top notch. So, I mean, for anybody who gets worried for like about their Wii U console bricking, it's just, you know, obviously you go to them. So, but it's not much of a hassle.
Yeah, the only thing I'm worried about is the gamepad itself, just because of how expensive they'll allegedly be when they actually come out. I mean, I don't need it to be broken and then have to pay like $150 just to get another one. So that's a little worrisome. But other than that, I'm not too worried. I think that the console is built to last, hopefully anyways. I mean, Nintendo usually does pretty well with that.
I'll say, Nintendo consoles are known to be very... proverbial, you know, to the point where they put a lot of damage to them, but they still
right. Yeah, and the only thing that's also worrying to me is that, like, a lot of the times the controllers you have to replace just because the joysticks go bad. I mean, what happens if the joysticks get real loose with the gamepad? I mean, what do you do then? Is Nintendo going to be able to replace those for you? It's going to be interesting.
I don't want to have that awkward conversation about everyone to realize your gamepad's broken or something's wrong with it, and you're like, yeah, I need a replacement gamepad. I mean, how much is it going to be? And then you get that price in there, and you're like,
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Do you have any refurbished ones? Or
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Is there a way I can, you know, jimmy-rig my iPad and put a little couple joysticks on there and do something with that? Is there any way around that? It's like, no, you're going to have to give us the price, so like so-and-so price on this. I'm just like,
hopefully, Nintendo hasn't said, and I, as far as I know, hasn't said exactly how much repairs to like gamepad specifically is going to be, but I imagine that as the console ages and people's, you know, their gamepads are going to break somewhere, some way, somehow, someone's going to break their gamepad, and then the first stories will come out of how much that's exactly going to cost.
Oh yeah, definitely.
If anybody had to take guesses,
I would say that it's going to be at least $80 to repair. Like if it's like screen damage, perhaps. Maybe if it's something a little less, then maybe not. But I mean, I imagine $80 sounds about right for me.
Yeah, I'll go around 100 probably for mine.
Well, I had actually, you know, read somewhere that somebody did have to send theirs in, and when it came back, it had a receipt in the or an invoice in the box. It was covered under the warranty, but the invoice was in the box, and the actual invoice stated that the controller itself was around $86, somewhere around there. So, I think that maybe it's going to be cheaper than we'd like. But again, that invoice could have just been for the repair. So, I mean, it's hard to tell exactly, but I would hope not too expensive. I mean, I think 100 would probably be the cap, but I think that once we start seeing third party controllers out there and whatnot, we'll probably see them down between 50 and 100, depending upon who you buy them from.
Right. Yeah. And that's another thing. I mean, are we going to start to see third party game pads? Like, is Mad Cat's going to come out with a game pad? Well, of course, when games that support it actually come out. But I mean, that'll be interesting if that ever happens also.
It is, and, you know, given the quality of Mad Cat's controllers, though, I mean, it's like how sturdy are these things going to be?
Right, yeah. I tend to stick to first-party controllers just because, like, when I remember way, way back on the Super Nintendo, I bought this controller that had, like, little switches on the top for, like, turbo.
I had those, too.
But it lasted for probably about a year, and then it just stopped working completely. And it was the saddest day of my life. It was terrible. Yeah.
The turbo controllers were were one of my some of my favorite controllers out there. I mean, yeah, they didn't last long, but when they did, I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's right. They even had them as far into like the Nintendo 64 days. I remember I used to have one from Mad Catz that you like push a button and then you can control do like macro controls for like fighting games and stuff like that. It's kind of interesting, but that one broke too.
But given the gentleman right now that we are in the holiday spirit right now, and we have spoke, you know, about like, oh, what games or anything like that we bought for our loved ones or like, you know, loved ones and friends. One thing I wanted to bring up as far as a bit of nostalgia, though, is what was your favorite video game related item you ever received for Christmas, be it game, a peripheral, a console, or even, like, for me, whatever, as a kid, I ended up getting a subscription to Nintendo Power as, like, a Christmas gift.
Oh, well, that's actually a pretty good one, actually. I think my favorite gift would have to be Ocarina of Time, actually. I think I got that as a Christmas gift. And then now, even to this day, every year I pull out Ocarina of Time and give it a playthrough. This the last couple of years it's been on the 3DS just because it's a little bit more convenient. But yeah, that's one of the games I keep going back to every holiday.
It is. Well, what about you, Scott?
You know, that it's tough. You know, I think one of the my favorite Christmas gifts was probably my Super Nintendo. And I think a lot of it was, you know, just the story behind it. You know, when I got it, I thought it was a Super Nintendo. I opened it up and it was a word processor. I mean, that was back in, you know, the early 90s. So I was really upset that here I was led on that the box was the exact same shape, size, and weight as what a Super Nintendo should be. I open it up. It's a word processor. And then
fooled again.
It was. Yeah, I was, you know, I was happy, you know, being you know, wanting to be a writer at that time and have so many ideas for stories and so on in my head. You know, I liked it, but it was kind of bittersweet because it wasn't what I really wanted. But I did get, you know, from other family members, I actually got the Super Nintendo that year. So
oh, good.
it did work out, but, you know, it was a day of, you know, kind of, you know, bittersweet day in between before I got that, you know, happy that I got the word processor and upset that I didn't get the Super Nintendo. But the downside is when I got the Super Nintendo home and I hooked it up to play it, it was in high school. So I had one of my friends over that it was that weekend and, my parents were both working overnights at the time. So it was just me, my friend and my brother at home. And, we hook it up and there's no game in the box. Everything's there, but no game. So I swore up and down that there was a game in there. I thought my brother had hid the game because he didn't want me and my friend to play it. So I remember my brother and I getting into a huge fight. I beat him up a little bit. And so
I should have.
Yeah, exactly. And then I found out a couple hours later that he really didn't hide the game. And I didn't really feel bad because, you know, it was an excuse to beat up my brother a little bit. So so I ended up taking it back and actually got it from Target. Is I found out where they got it from. So I took it back, and it had this sticker on the box, kind of like a blue piece of tape or whatnot. And come to find out, it had been returned, and whoever returned it didn't return the game. Luckily, they had one more on the shelf, and I was able to exchange it and play it the next day. But it was a long couple of days.
What game did it come with? Was it Super Mario World?
It was Super Mario World. So so that's still, I think, to this day, one of my favorite Mario games because – you know, there's so much time waiting just to play it, and then to get the system and not be able to play for a couple other days. Overall, that's still one of my favorite Mario games, just because of that reason.
Yeah, World is definitely a good one. I mean, it's kind of a toss up for me between World and 3, but I do gotta say that this one, New Super Mario Brothers U or whatever it's called, is definitely up there for me. It's the best Mario game, 2D side scrolling Mario game I think I've played since World. And in fact, so
yeah. And what I love about it, I mean, is, you know, even though it's the basics of it aren't much different than, you know, even World was. There's not a huge difference between the two as far as like the basics. You know, you travel from level to level on the world map and so on. But each time that they come out with a game with the same formula, it still blows my mind how much better it is mm-hmm. than the previous ones. I mean, they can. What other game can take the exact same concept and just each time one up themselves and make it just better and better and still be true to the roots there?
Right, and you know, I think one of the reasons I like this one so much too is that it's it just seems to fit perfectly with the gamepad. I mean, you can use the D-pad no problem and not have any. It just feels nice in your hand still. And then that's how Mario games are meant to be played. You know, with a D-pad. Well, at least 2D side-scrolling Mario games are supposed to be played with the D-pad. So it just feels nice playing it. It feels very comfortable. So that's it's just a great game.
No, yeah. Speaking of the D-pad, I mean, the size and the shape. Well, the size itself of that, like Nintendo's original D-pad design, has changed over the years. I know it's mm-hmm. been going from different sizes, be it whatever it's on the Super Nintendo or the directional, the one that's on the GameCube controller. I didn't realize this until I forgot what I was watching. I think it was talking some video about discussing what it would be like for. They were discussing about it was an IGN review of the Wii U Pro controller.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were mentioning how much they like the D-pad on there and comparing how much you have the deep directional pad, what you have on, say, like the 360, which, given how the 360 controller, if I had to rate my favorite controllers up there, it's up there with a close, probably, it's a close second up there to the Super Nintendo controller, but, I mean, the reason it doesn't go up to that point, the one flaw I find with it is I don't like that mushy D-pad.
It's terrible, yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing, though, that they reveal in the video. Nintendo's patent of that D-pad ran out about 6 or 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that could at least open up to the point of this D-pad being used in other, like competing controllers. And I welcome that idea. I mean,
I do too, yeah.
But back to the topic at hand, I mean, when we were mentioning about, you know, obviously with Christmas ideas, well, my favorite, obviously, has to be, you know, the Virtual Boy. Pause. Okay. Pause for that. No, seriously. I mean, yeah, bad joke, everybody.
I was thinking, I was like, wait, is this for real?
Yes, it's, you know, it's my favorite gift because it made me realize never to trust Santa or my parents or, you know, never trust myself, whatever. I mean, to this day, again, I say to myself, man, I was really stupid back then. I mean, even I have old Super Nintendo cartridges of games. I'm like, why? This is something James Rolfe of AVGN could be reviewing right now. And I'm like, why did I? Even my own mother had to think, like, why are you buying this right now? But I digress. My favorite would have to be the Nintendo GameCube, and you know, reason being is the means of how I received it. You know. Because the Nintendo GameCube was probably, as far as, like, one console that I followed all the way from as a teenager up to the point of, like, its development and, well, when to its release, you know, something I was really excited for. And, you know, granted, though, with the 64, I got all the information from my older brother because he was the one with the subscription Nintendo Power, and he always hoarded all the, like, each issue. And, you know, the time I'd get it, I'd be kind of a couple months behind, you know, reading up on it a little bit. But,
right.
And this one, you know, didn't even really excited for it. You know, I asked for it for Christmas, and yes, I even asked for all the Nintendo published titles that were released at the time, at its launch. I think it was like 5 or 6 or so. I mean, yes, a lot of those. I mean, I had a lengthy Christmas list as a kid. I mean, my parents still, like, you know, like, but with my parents, though, they would always egg me, say to me, it's like, you know, we're not going to be able to get it for you. You know, find one. We can't do that. And come Christmas Day, I'm getting the games first because, well, when I wake up Christmas morning as a kid, you know, even when we're adult, like me and my siblings, like growing up at this age right now, my parents still do a tradition of like Santa present, you know, one that's not underneath the tree that they hide. I'm like, oh yeah, here you guys go, kids. So they the one gift we're looking for, and I noticed whatever it wasn't there, and I'm like, you know, where's everything at? And it was an empty box. I'm like, okay, well, what's the deal with this right now? And, you know, open up the other presents, close all the other stuff, and I get the games. I'm like, well, what's the deal with this right now? all the presents have been opened and nothing's out there. And I asked my mom, like, what's the deal right now? And minutes go by and we're about to eat dinner. I'm like, is this a joke?
Yeah.
They would say to me, like, we're going to find one probably after, you know, after Christmas for you, whatever. Don't worry, you know. And as soon as before dinner started, whatever, my dad said, pointed it out to, like, you know, an oak tree outside of our house. And like, hey, Harrison, what's that out in the oak tree, whatever? And I see a large square box, a square box outside there. And, you know, there's snow on the ground. I put on my boots, rush out there, grab it, open it up. And lo and behold, I got my Nintendo GameCube. And, awesome. You know, to that day, it's still my favorite Christmas moment as a kid. It's still one of my favorite. I mean, to that point, it's still my favorite thing I ever received. And, you know, I hope one day when I have kids, I will do something similar to that and put them through the hell that I did for those few hours I did. It's like, I have Rogue Squadron 2, but I have nothing to play it. What is this?
Yeah, I can read the instructions manual, I guess, but...
It's like, I read it, and it's... Here's the discs. These are cool. Yeah. Everybody look at them and try to plug my controller into my old 64. Nothing's happening, but... Yeah, that's my favorite gift of all time, and it will be to this point right now, and just the joy I had receiving that in that fashion still puts a smile on my face to this day. And, you know, I as cruel as my parents were, I thank their hard work for finding that, you know, going through and actually finding one, like, one of those consoles probably in the few shops in my hometown. And I thank my mom and dad for that, because... Still, my Nintendo GameCube probably recently is still one of my favorite consoles of all time.
Right, yeah. Can we just talk about how awesome the GameCube was? I mean, that was a great console. It had a lot of good games on it. I mean, I think maybe it didn't have the quantity of games as some of the other consoles, but I mean, I can name off a good 15 games that were all just fantastic. I mean, from Eternal Darkness to Pikmin to, I mean, it was just a great console.
For being Nintendo's lowest selling home console, and this is one thing I stress a lot that I kind of get annoyed at. Yes, it was Nintendo's lowest selling, like, you know, lowest selling, like, a home console to date. Yet when it's always put in retrospectives for consoles that are, yeah, it's always, if you have like a top 20 like consoles of all time, it's usually in the middle of the pack or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always mentioned about how they bring up the word failure to it, or it's a last place console. Yes, it get like. You can thank both the cause for that, though, is like the rise of Xbox Live and, of course, Halo on the Xbox for putting that steady stream of like that last push to be, you know, in second place, like to finish second place in that that console generation. But I just don't, like, when I hear the word failure, I'm like, you know, define failure of this console. I mean, it didn't meet expectations, obviously, but I feel like when I define failure, I feel like it's something that didn't finish, like, cross the finish line of sort. Like, given for an example, the Dreamcast, the Saturn,
mm-hmm.
Jaguar, yeah. Consoles that didn't even last long. Well, that console lasted it's a good 5 years until, you know, once we got the Wii. But, yeah, if you really want to call it a failure, instead of calling it a failure, just call it something like it was an underwhelming... That's what it was. You know, the part of the blame you could do... You had a new competitor coming in a three-console race that obviously, you know, didn't bode well for Nintendo, and, you know, it made them have to change their outlook of how they approach games, you know.
Uh-huh.
I think right now, well, say what you will about how, like, Nintendo is putting, like, you know, under, like, with the Wii, and even with the Wii U right now, how some are saying how powerful it is, or how it's going to be with its third-party support. I feel if they would have still went that same route of, like, you know, pumping out as good enough visual, like, graphical power, they probably wouldn't, they'd probably be still in the same route, whatever they were with the GameCube, you know, struggling behind. I mean, in a three-console race, they have to try things differently, you know, and I respect that. So, I mean, I do hope for another console that's, like, up in that par that can be, you know, not underpowered between its competitors. You have to look at the business side of it. It's you have to, like, separate yourself from other consoles to actually, you know, get yourself, like, to, for the benefit of the success of the console itself. And right now, like the last generation, I had a 360 and a Wii, and my 360 complemented my Wii pretty well. Mm-hmm. And
right.
It's not bad to have own two consoles.
Yeah, that's right. If you fashion yourself a gamer, then you kind of have to have multiple consoles to kind of get all the different experiences. I know it's an expensive hobby, but that's kind of the hobby that we've chosen.
Very, very true. And I think looking back at the GameCube, it was we've got to look at a couple things that are going on there too. I mean, we went from a cartridge based system to the drastic change over to a CD type based system. Mm-hmm. Or a basically a digital disc. So, it was a pretty big transition. All the people that played Nintendo, they knew the cartridges, whether it was a NES, Super NES, the Famicons or the Game Boy cartridges. So, that was a pretty big jump at a time when, Sony's and so on were already doing the disc thing. So, it's just kind of trying to should you make that jump with Nintendo or not, or it's just so new, so different. But not only that, and not a lot of people knew about it back then, but the failure of them trying to switch to a disc system before with the with the Super Nintendo CD type thing with the CD, the Philips CDs and so on. That was such a mess for them also, and that was kind of the birth of the PlayStation. So Nintendo going that route after they've already basically failed at it, it was such a big thing, and what came out of it was just an awesome product. Sure, a lot of people it seems were a little scared, but I would never call it a failure. It was without that. Where would we be today? Would we have sure we'd probably still have a disc version of a console. But would we have, the gamepad controller or whatnot? Or mm-hmm. like Harrison said, would we still be that step behind? Instead of what I think right now, we're actually a step ahead of the others.
Right, yeah. Say what you will about what Nintendo has done with the Wii U and graphically, because we don't even know what is the competitors are going to be doing. But you look at things like what they're doing with the gamepad controller and what they've done with the Miiverse. There's no denying that's a change for the better. That's something that you cannot do on an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3.
Exactly. And one of the big complaints I've it's kind of been ongoing about the Wii U is the third party support. We've seen some games, Bayonetta 2, that are actually going to be revived on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. And we've seen other games that they were going to be on the Wii U and suddenly they backed out, or there are rumors and those rumors were completely false. And a lot of people are thinking that the third party support, kind of saying that the third party support isn't there. But I think that we're at a point in the system's infancy where there is obviously third party support, and those third party companies that have jumped on board have really jumped on board and made the best of it. But we got to remember that it's not just as it's not an easy port from one console to the other. And with the launch time frame and so on, there is just so many games coming out right now. I don't know that there was even time or resources to port a lot of those games over to the Wii U. I think over the next year, possibly even 2 years, maybe it'll be spread out, but I think we're going to see a lot more third-party support in the future. And just like you said, to see the actual capabilities of the system and how far they can push it to really, really go beyond our expectations.
Exactly. And, it's... We're in the beginning of this next generation, this new generation of consoles, and we still don't know what everybody else is going to be doing. But I will always just stress how much what's important to this. It's the Wii U has to gain some set up a good firm a stand for these next couple months. And if they can do that, they can be fine probably going in. And like you said, it comes down to third-party support and exclusives. But hopefully when it comes down to E3, when you have these new hardware, these new hardware announcements, is what's Nintendo going to announce as far as software that's going to take the news, take the buzz off away from them to, everybody else, for the media, the rest of the gaming media, us in the gaming media, to, turn our heads to them.
Right, you know, I mean, kind of looking ahead, I think that Nintendo's really going to have to hit it big software-wise, like, be it maybe just like a video showing a sizzle reel of maybe Smash Brothers or Zelda, although we might not get them this next year. I mean, at least we know that something is coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, we know that they exist at this point, instead of just, like, guessing, oh, what's this going to look like?
Right, yeah, I mean, I think that would be great. I mean, I can't see either Zelda or Smash Brothers being playable this year. I think it's way too early for that. But perhaps we'll get something that, like a Metroid, or, I mean, who knows? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Nintendo has up its sleeve.
Exactly, and you know, and I can totally expect a Metroid. Be it, it's just the question is who's going to develop it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
Yeah. Oh man, imagine a HD Metroid. I mean, Prime was pretty, but I mean, even Corruption was a good looking game. But I just can't wait to see what the series is gonna do in HD. It's just gonna be. I can't wait. It's gonna be great.
Mm-hmm. And this is a series itself that needs another good boost, because I mean, it's a great series and a good standing, like on the critical side. It just on the sales side, it's just been struggling, and Nintendo has to find a way to, you know, get the series, like, people other than just the hardcore to notice it.
Right. Yeah. I think that the Prime series where it really suffers is that first-person shooters don't really do well in Japan, so that it's kind of cutting itself off from that market. But so aside from that, I mean, it's just not getting too much support from the Japanese side of Nintendo, I don't think, and I think that's where it really hurts it. I mean, when was the last time you saw a Metroid commercial on TV? I don't think when Corruption came out that there was any advertising at all, and you know, it's hard for people to find games that way.
It is, and you know,
very true.
Yeah, I mean, when Prime first came out, it had a very huge marketing push, and yes, to this point, it's still probably one of the more successful, like, sales-wise Nintendo game, like, Metroid games, but later on at that, it's still been kind of struggling. I mean, Echo's kind of it's a different approach, and, you know, kind of a different game itself. It didn't fare well as, like, its predecessor.
Yeah, and I think what's cool about the eShop, though, is that there's you can, like, see videos for upcoming games, not just on the eShop on the Wii U, but on the 3DS also. I mean, and it's really cool on the 3DS because you can actually see those games in 3D on your console, so it's neat. I think Nintendo's kind of going in the right direction. Hopefully they'll continue on the path and not just, like, rest on their laurels right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I think that's just about it for the show. I mean, do you guys have anything closing things to add? I mean, we didn't really get to talk about the whole NRA discussion. I think that now would maybe be a time to, if you're ready for that type of thing. Do you kind of want to dive into that for a little bit?
Yeah. And just as a disclaimer to all of our listeners out there, we here, you know, in Nintendo right now, you know, both between Eugene and Scott and myself, you know, given, you know, different political or religious affiliations that we have, you know, mm-hmm. we're still good friends on here in this good standing. It's just when you have, I mean, and obviously the tragedy at Sandy Hook to this point, and even hearing the first news coming out of that, I mean, it's a terrible tragedy at this point. And yes, at this point right now, through social media and even through the major news outlets, it has gotten carried away to the point of focusing on the victims and just gotten into this large gun control debate. And I couldn't tell you how many times I've tried to just bite my tongue on Facebook or Twitter to, you know, state my opinions on it. I mean, all of us on here have a different opinion as far as it comes to gun control. I mean, even with Scott right now, I mean, you have a family, and your opinion varies from even, like, any of us who are just, you know, kids straight out of college. But
right.
When you have something like this where I feel like we're stuck in the 1990s when it comes to discussion, and when you have a week to prepare a statement like the NRA did, and they call out, be it media, movies, and violent games as a reason of what we glorify in this culture, when you put the blame on something like that, it's I'm dumbfounded. I really am to the point where I'm thinking like this is what you're blaming. You're really going back to what, you know, lawyers and politicians like, be it like Joe Lieberman or Jack Thompson, who have been like campaigning to get these things like, you know, banned, or even just recently, which was just shot down in the Supreme Court, to jail game clerks for selling M-rated games to minors. Now, this is the part of the statement that really just, what, like, you know, made me want to like pull up my hair, and, you know, it got me carried away from work, whatever, when I was hitting on Twitter. And this is the comment right here. This is what they describe the industry. There exists in this country, sadly, a callous, corrupt, and corrupting shadow industry that sells and stows violence against its own people.
Mm-hmm.
Why and what do you have to say about that? It's, and I know, Scott, I had posted something, I posted on Facebook about this whole statement about how, you know, oh, it mentioned how the NRA had hit a new low when you're blaming video games as the cause for this tragedy. And, of course, that opened the floodgates for all the pro, you know, the pro-gun people on there saying, agreeing with this statement. And I couldn't respond. Not because I didn't have, like, a reason. It's just, why are we seriously doing this? But, I mean, you're a parent. You're a parent, Scott. What do you have to say about this?
Well, and I think that conversation on your page was actually overall a pretty good conversation between, I mean, people. I have no idea who they were, but I held back, I'm sure, a little bit also on there. But, you know, as a parent, you know, I think that in my eyes, and I've always had a pretty big stance on this issue itself. You know, it all comes down to the parenting in my eyes. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, mom and dad or even, you know, brothers and sisters, but, you know, family members and even friends of family members. You know, it comes down to those people being monitored, and by those people, it's, you know, anybody that is impressionable in the household, whether it be children, people with mental disabilities, or even in some cases, you know, older people who might be going through, you know, things like Alzheimer's and so on like that. You know, the blame can't fall into the hands of an inanimate object like a video game or a movie or a comic book or even the old books. You know, there's so many, you know, old literature books out there that are just much more violent than some of the things here today. You know, if we're going to focus on the video game aspect here, you know, who buys these games for the kids out there? I mean, it's the parents and the family members. And,
right.
And I think when it comes down to it, I know exactly what my kids are playing. You know, while we're doing this podcast, I can hear through this wall here on the other side of my wall is the game room. My daughter's playing Minecraft on mm-hmm. the Xbox 360, and she's yelling at all her friends because suddenly they're kind of ganging up on her and not, you know, playing as a team. And it's all in good fun and everything, but I know what they're playing. I know what games they have. And not just that. If we go beyond that, you know, their social media. I have all their mm-hmm. passwords. I can go in there anytime. I can look at all that. And I think what happens in too many scenarios is that the people that should be in charge or watching these people, they're using these devices as basically babysitters in a lot of cases.
Right.
You know, buy them the newest game, the newest, you know, Call of Duties or even the newest Mario and let them play for hours and hours on end with their friends and everything. And, you know, the parents think, well, they're at home. They're not out running the streets. What do I need to watch them for? And the problem is, at that point, they're no longer involved. And that's where, you know, these ideas might get into the kid's head. And they don't have anybody there to help them, steer them in the right direction. And if it's somebody that, you know, maybe does have some sort of, I don't know, some sort of mental issue out there that might cause them to, you know, really want to act on these thoughts and so on. If the family member or parent or friend or whatever is involved, they're going to see the signs and they're going to mm-hmm. be able to hopefully get them the help they need. And, you know, that's the way I see it. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter who, I guess, who says it, whether it's coming from the NRA, from the government, from, you know, the teachers unions, whoever. You know, I think that in the long run, it doesn't really matter. You know, we can't keep blaming these objects that we're doing. I mean, if we get rid of the video games, let's say the video games are found to be the cause. We get rid of the video games. Suddenly it's movies. We get rid of the movies. Then we get rid of the internet and the books. And, you know, where are you going to put the blame on then? The blame's going to eventually go to where it needs to be. You know, the only real, you know, other than the NRA putting blame on the actual, you know, the different industries other themselves, you know, I don't believe it was, you know, guns are gun control is the issue. And in my eyes, you know, It's again, the responsibility is put on the people that own those guns. But for an industry such as the NRA, that a lot of the blame gets put on them for many, many things out there, you know, to kind of turn that around and put that blame on another industry, that's one of the issues I have with that portion of it. But, you know, that's kind of my stance on it. You know, in the end, it comes down to the people that have the power to, you know, to help these people that might act upon these urges or whatnot.
Right. And I mean, and like with any entertainment industry, be it video games or movies, like you said, I mean, it's you're going to have to be the judge with your own children as to what type of games are appropriate for them for their mental state of mind at the moment. I mean, like, not every kid is going to be the same. I mean, one 16-year-old might be able to handle Call of Duty, where another just won't because they're not just not ready for that mentally. And then you might even think that like a 13-year-old can play like a game like Call of Duty or God of War. I mean, it just all depends on the parenting and the children involved. And then, I mean, getting back to the gun control issue, I mean, it's just really sad that something like a tragedy like what happened at Sandy Hook is what's having to bring out all these issues. And then on top of it, everybody's blaming somebody else, and when the real root of the problem is not any of these things. I mean, it's just it's really, I think the where we are as a society, like parenting wise, I mean, and we just got to do a better job. I mean, this is something that could completely have been avoided had all the warning signs been looked upon, probably. So
Exactly. I mean, you have those warning signs, the same thing. And, you know, an example for that, just look at Columbine, for instance. You know, the things that really that are the main cause for that, though, is just it was crap parenting and bullying. I mean, bullying to the full extent that really kind of caused this. And, you know, for my stance on gun control, I mean, I'm not going to go on a rant on there. I mean, I have no problem with someone having a handgun to protect themselves. I mean, it just when it goes down to when you have this country that has so many other people that own these different types of weapons, where I realize, you know, where do we draw the line on that? I mean, it's just, you know, to protect yourself to the point. And then, but when it comes to, you know, putting this blame issue, I mean, when you're for an organization, the NRA's job, as far as like, you know, to promote itself is one thing, gun responsibility, you know, proper gun responsibility. And I feel like they've gone really way too much away from that. I mean, to this now, it just feels more like it's not gun responsibility, it's gun lobbying. That's what I feel it's going more down into, and I find it really sad that I have all my pro-gun friends on there. I have no problem. I mean, good friends of mine, they're like, oh, thanks for all this, like, gun talk right now because gun sales are up, and, you know, thanks for, like, you know, for me wanting to buy a gun. I'm like, that itself just makes me lose more and more faith in humanity because of that. It's just, why do you feel proud of that? I mean, I even said on Twitter about it like a week ago, 2 days after this tragedy. I'm like, I said on Twitter, you know, the idea of owning a handgun to protect one's family does not scare me. It's the obsession over one's gun over everything else is what scares me. When it comes down to, I mean, you have people who find this as the greatest right in the world. Yet I feel like the right to live, the right to breathe, the right to have a roof over your head, and even the right to free speech, I feel like trump that all. But, you know, with the NRA just going to the point of blaming media and just dealing with this, it's just, why can't you just look? I mean, like Scott said, you get rid of that, then it's going to point to something else. But also, to put it as far as, like, the perspective of everything else, I mean, look at all these different countries. For instance, like, look at South Korea, which is very, like, known for, like, you know, Counter-Strike and StarCraft tournaments. Yet they play this as it's their own national sport, and yet there's no tragedies involving in this. But of course, you can look in as far as country, like our own country. You know, you have all these different, like, you know, gang bangers out there to the point where it's leading more and more into this, like, you know, rampant violence. It's just when you're trying to blame such an industry like this, it's just, well, and a friend of mine at work said this really well. It's like when I told him the news, he said this straight up, and I had to retweet this to him. It's like, it's really sad when the video game industry has more transparency than the NRA.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the issue as far as when it comes to violent games, I'm not a parent, but I know when I have kids, I'm going to know, especially to the point where, like, okay, you can't have this certain game, whatever, if it's M-rated, because it's, I'm not afraid of you being impressionable. It's just the same way when my parents were when I was watching R-rated movies. Like, you're only going to watch that if I'm watching it, but I'm not going to allow you to buy that, whatever, because, you know, it's common sense. It's like, you know, kids, whatever, or like, it's the same kind of thing when it comes down to pornography, whatever. When you, I remember when you were a kid and you stumble upon, like, a couple of, like, Playboys, for instance, and you look at it and just, I feel like it's in the same cat. I'm not trying to put in, as far as the game industry to pornography, but it just, it's in that same kind of grand scheme of things right now. It's like, you stumble upon it, it just, it's not for you at that age. You know, it's not marketed towards you. But then again, these games are somewhat marketed towards, you know, the hardcore gamers and some of the, not necessarily the kids, but easily like that, kids can get a handle of these. But again, to end on this, it just, violent games are not the issue with this. It's overall, it's a matter of like, are we paying attention to our kids? That's it.
Right. Yeah. It's so much deeper than blaming it on video games or it's something like that. I mean, it's a deeper issue that it, I mean, it's important that I think that hopefully with this tragedy, we'll look at that a little bit deeper and hopefully find an end or at least an answer to how to fix it, because like President Obama said, I mean, this is something that was completely unavoidable and should never have happened. So,
and it's going to lead to, I mean, listening out there, you know, way, but I feel as if who can and cannot own a gun is going to be looked more at, because even if you're not, like, you're not mentally unstable, there are certain people out there, be it, you know, with home, like, domestic abuse, or those who are bullied, or those who can get a hold of their dad's gun because they know where it's at. I mean, there are just people out there that just should not own a gun.
Right.
Down to the nitty-gritty.
Right. Well, with that note, I mean, thank you, everybody, for listening to Infendo Radio. It's been another good week this week, and hopefully we can get some comments in from all of you, you know, asking questions, telling us about how your Christmas was, whatever, and then we'll read it on the show. So thank you, Scott. Thank you, Harrison. Thank you all for listening.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.